copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I have worked in clinics for people with sexual problems. And I sort of got used in that setting and working with couples to talking very openly about sex. And that's part of being a therapist. You have to help people to be comfortable to use words like penis and vagina and clitoris and things like that that in normal conversation we don't necessarily speak very openly about. But in a fallen world, we're obviously pushing back against brokenness. So therapy, medicine, the whole world of the medical enterprise is pushing back against the fall in the ways that it's come down to us. It's hopefully enhancing beauty. So restoring people to the beauty of pleasure in their sexual relationship when they haven't been able to have it. Quite a number of couples come to us and sort of their faces are rather like this. Obviously we don't see them in bed, but they're struggling with why is sex so difficult? We thought from our previous experience and everything that it would be easy. So the difficulties for women, this is coming from a survey that was done especially amongst Christian women in the United States. The number one is finding energy for sex. The second, feeling sexual desire. And the third, reaching orgasm. And the frequency of orgasm for women being never for 8%, 1 in 4 or less, 20% of the time, half the time 15%, often 32%, always 25%. And you know what it is for men, of course. It's much more like always 95%. So that creates an imbalance, doesn't it, which is frustrating for many women. And men often are not very sensitive to women because they don't know how to help in this. Going on from the difficulties for women, becoming sexually aroused, 20% of women find that hard. Having pain, 12% of women having pain most or every time when they have intercourse. And having only 25% having no sexual difficulty. So contrast that then with the difficulties for men. Men, 22% ejaculate too soon. Only 16% complain about having the energy for sex. It was much higher for the women. Maintaining an erection in 12%. Desire, 9%. Getting an erection, 4%. No difficulty, 50%. So the women, it was 25% with no difficulty. The men, it's about 50%. So we, when people come with sexual problems, obviously, you need to have a lot of patience in talking about this. Sometimes they'll go to pastors. Very often they'll go to counselors. Sometimes they'll talk to friends. But part of our task is helping a couple to create dialogue and listen well to each other about what's gone wrong and why it's difficult. So helping them to build each other up in love rather than tear each other down with the criticism and the contempt that we talked about last night. So it's important to be able to be comfortable with sexual language and talking about what helps and what hinders. Helping them to be comfortable, and if you are comfortable talking about it, then you help to make them comfortable. So finding a language that's and I think it's much better to use the sort of, as with talking with children, it's much better to use the real anatomical language rather than made up names for their genitals. And this helps to reduce the shame and anxiety that inevitably couples bring with them when they're talking about sexual difficulties. And what we're trying to do is get them talking and get them touching again. And when I say touching, I don't mean necessarily having intercourse. I mean being affectionate, being intimate. And very often it's the women, as I said yesterday, who feel that my husband only touches me when he wants sex. What the husband has to do is learn that he needs to be touching his wife a lot, but not with this sort of implicit demand, we need to go the whole way, but just because he cares about her. And then demonstrating empathy with the hard and different and difficult stories that each brings to them, to the marriage. So when I sit down with a couple, I will want to hear the story of how they learned about sex, what their parents told them, what happened in relation to their peers. Have they encountered pornography? Have they been in previous sexual relationships? Have they had sexual abuse? All of the things that have shaped who they are today and their sexual responses. And to help them to enter into the grief of broken sex and the anger about things that have been done to them that shouldn't have been done to them. And then maybe to talk about expectations. One of the couple may come with very different expectations than the other because of their backgrounds and their education. So we're going into sort of the learning about their... So telling stories about one's background, one's history, and a lot of that should begin in premarital counseling. So we usually spend a whole session talking about sexual background when you're preparing people for marriage, so that they come into marriage knowing a little bit of what the other person has dealt with in this area. So just to underline the importance of listening and story for the couple with each other, because it gives them more empathy, and for you with them, whether you're a pastor or a counselor. There may be differences in expectation of how often, for example, a couple will have sex. And this will vary with age. So there is a gradual decline in terms of, for men especially, of testosterone over the years. And I can tell you in my 70s, I'm sort of glad for that decline somewhat. It takes away some of the pressure that many men feel of the high testosterone drive for sex. And very often the best sex is had in a couple who've been committed to each other, and this is borne out by research over years, where the man's sort of drive is beginning to reduce a bit, and the woman's, she's learning how to awaken her body and how to be more content with her body after years of living with it and having children, and now her children have left home and her body stays the same shape most of the time. So there's more, in a sense, compatibility, often later in a marriage than there is earlier on. But you can see here the sort of it's not, for most people, it's not, you know, three or four times a week. For many couples, it's just once, two or three times a month. So expectations are important. And then honoring and understanding the differences between men and women. That women in general do tend to have less overt desire than men. They do desire sex, but it's much more complicated. So for women, it's very often more of a choice to say, I am going to be intimate with my husband, and as I become intimate, physically intimate, then the desire, the physical desire will come, the arousal will come. For men, they often feel aroused and desiring and wanting it before they've even initiated anything. And then the women feel pressured, and it's difficult for them. So learning this sexual dance is something, again, learning the differences, learning that, you know, knowing that women are much more affected by the context. It's hard for them if they have young children. There's a sort of saying that after you've had one child, a woman's sexual desire goes down 50%. After two, it goes down another 50%. After three, another 50%. Well, that's not quite true, but many women feel like that. It's hard at that stage of life to be interested in sex. They're so preoccupied with caring for others and the practical things of life. Men tend to want sex, you know, more often than women. As we've said, that men more easily have an orgasm than women. For some women, it's hard. So helping a man to understand what helps his wife towards climax, towards orgasm, is part of the education. Because for many men who've been raised on pornography, they really are pretty clueless. Even in this age where you'd think there's so much information, their perspective is so distorted by porn. So honoring the differences and respecting them should be part, I think, of premarital counseling, of making sure they understand these differences, giving them books that help them with this. Yelena said that most sexual problems have their basis outside the bedroom. In other words, in the relationship, in the difficulties of the relationship. And there's a lot of truth in that. There are very specific problems, and it's important when you're dealing with problems of desire and arousal and orgasm in your own marriage or in someone else's, is to be aware of the physical factors of age, of illness, of depression that obviously reduce desire, of being on medication, some medications reduce desire, reduce arousal, make it difficult to have an erection. And then there are the psychological factors of what's going on in the relationship, the arguments, the unresolved issues that are between them, that make intimacy, physical intimacy, hard. Maybe the sexual identity issues, that some people get into marriage and then they begin to realize those earlier same-sex attraction feelings that I had before I got married, that I thought would disappear when I got married, are still here, and I'm struggling with those. Or maybe people who have a history of pornography and they thought marriage would solve that. I can tell you, it does not solve it. You take the issues with pornography into the marriage and you have to deal with them. I'm going back here, yeah. And then the differences of expectations, as I've said. I find that in helping couples too, in my own mind, I have these sort of principled boundaries that come partly from scripture, partly from just common sense in dealing with relationships, and from common grace wisdom. Obviously, the Bible tells us there should be no sex outside marriage, that the sexual imagination should be within bounds, because you can use your imagination to be unfaithful. But it needs to keep your imagination within, erotically imagining your spouse, not other people. I think there should be no habitual or addictive masturbation. That's a whole topic in itself, isn't it? Because it's such it's just a very big topic. But that's sort of my summary of it here. There should be no use of pornography. I don't think pornography is helpful. I think anal sex in the pornographic world, in the secular talk, is as if it's talked about as if this is normal. And to put it crudely, the anus is not for having things put into it; it's for things coming out of it. there's more danger for sexually transmitted diseases with anal sex. And quite honestly, most women, after trying it, do not like it. That's the research on this. But it's popularly talked about as if this is something that's quite normal and okay. The 50 Shades of Grey world suggests that bondage and domination and sadism and masochism spice up your sexual relationship. I think in a good, loving relationship, you don't need bondage and domination. And there's something distorted and twisted about the relationship if you need these things to be sexually aroused. So sex should always be safe, consensual, and caring. Safe, consensual, and caring. Just a few words, and I know this is, but just to give you hope that where there is pain on intercourse, a lot can be done to help. Sometimes it's due to physical things, like, say, a tumor on the ovary or an ovarian cyst. Sometimes it's due to a history of sexual abuse. Very often, and I've had a number of couples come to me who have not been able to even consummate their marriage, begin their sexual relationship, because the woman has spasm of the vaginal muscles. And this can be helped with relaxation exercises, with what we call sensate focus, which is helping the couple to have enjoy each other physically, with back massage, foot massage, body massage, but without going the whole way to intercourse, so that it helps the woman to be more relaxed with physical touch. And eventually using plastic dilators before penetration by the penis, so gradually increasing in size. This can help the woman to feel more relaxed. So again, this is something that can be helped. Problems of male arousal can be helped, erectile dysfunction, and premature ejaculation and so on. There are often physical reasons for erectile dysfunction, things like diabetes or medication. And there are psychological reasons which also can be helped. People can be helped with that. The same with premature ejaculation. There are various techniques that we sexual therapists can use to help people get past that. And with delayed ejaculation, which may be have a number of both physical and psychological causes that you see here on the slide. So I summarize this with hopefully our sexuality is complex and broken, and it takes a lifetime to learn to dance well together as a couple and to adjust to the different personalities, different expectations, different bodies, and age. To sort of summarizing here some of the themes, it's really important to understand each other's story and to create a place where it's safe to tell those stories, whether in a counseling session or in just in your own marriage, to be able to dialogue about what's going on in the relationship that's interfering with sex, to go for help for the specific problems if you need that. And then a big part of this is re-education. So it's sort of educating out of yourself all the things you learned from your early days of life where you didn't have good sex education, or when you were educated by pornography. And in this comes the biblical framework of the goodness of sex and the delight that God has in us being delighted with each other. The story of the Song of Solomon, the whole biblical story that ultimately restores people's dignity and people's delight in each other. Again, a lot of material here, I know. And here are a couple of books that I just wanted to mention that these are more general about sex. I'm not sure whether they're in the notes or not, but Glenn Harrison's the most recent one here, A Better Story. You may have heard him here speaking on this topic. His book is really great, looking at the culture and where we've got to in relation to sexuality. The divine sex one is a little bit earlier. In relation to sexuality in marriage, there are many great books from Christians, and here are just a few of these that I have used. This one is a long one with a really good biblical perspective and quite a lot of chapters on troubleshooting. So things like premature ejaculation or not being able to have an orgasm. There are sections in that which are very good references for people who are having problems. So let me stop there. And